Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello there, everybody. It's me, Garrett Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you brought your A-game. A-made, no rain, from the track when we unite and spit, this isn't A-game, better bring your A-game. Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you brought your A-game. A-made, no rain.
Hey now, it's the Mike and JD Show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert. And JD is out tonight, but I have two guests. I needed two people to take JD's place. I have the one and the only cousin, Joe Gilbert. How you doing, Joe?
Doing pretty good, man. I just got to say, it's awesome that you guys have better intro music than most wrestlers nowadays.
Yeah. Thank you. thank you, Godzilla and Revelation for laying down a game for us, letting us use it. And then, man, I am excited to have this guy on the podcast. Me and him connected a few years ago through Fight Game Media. He was hosting a podcast over there for years. He's done some stuff with the Discovery Channel, HGTV, all kinds of different places. This dude is big time. What's up, James McDaniel? How you doing, man?
Mike, thank you so much for the invite tonight. This was, I think, one of the most, probably the most watched combat sports event in history. And I was really kind of sad I wasn't going to be able to talk about it anywhere because I haven't done any podcast, anything like this in the last year. And so I was super excited when you sent me the invite to come on. I wasn't going to miss this for the world.
Yeah, man. I know you're a big fight fan. So we connected over our love of pro wrestling. But one thing that I've always, that you and I have enjoyed talking about the most has probably been our love of boxing and MMA. And I think we've connected about that over the years. And so, and of course, On Patrol Live. Very clearly big fans of On Patrol Live. So.
Did I send you the video of my setup tonight?
You did, yeah.
I had three computers set up, three computers for On Patrol Live, and then the fights on my TV.
Yeah.
So I was working and watching at the same time tonight.
Yeah, James had a pretty cool setup over there. I'm gonna go to the chat real quick. Terrence Sullivan said, "Let's get ready to rumble, stumble, and fumble."
I'll do the fumbling if you guys do the rumbling.
Yep, and then. Keeba Wilson said, "This is better quality than the Netflix stream." I typically don't really cover a whole lot of boxing on this show or MMA. Really, we're predominantly a pro wrestling show. We're on the Voices of Wrestling Network. But I felt it was. I felt like I really wanted to cover the show, and JD and I were supposed to record last night, but right before we're like an hour before we're about to go on the air, he got pulled into work. And so I was like, oh man. And I didn't really want to stumble around to find a last minute guest. And to be quite honest with everybody, there was not a whole lot of pro wrestling news this week. Like, it was just kind of a slow news week. And so I was like, well, I don't really have much to talk about anyway. And I'm not going to go on the air and die for 60 minutes by myself. And so called an audible, pushed it back a night. And then I knew the fight was on. I knew I was going to watch it. I knew Joe was going to watch it. So made the audible, and now we're live after the Tyson and a Paul show. So we'll get to that. I'm also going to cover the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame. And so we'll be revealing those results on the air tonight. I'm sure a lot of you already know who got in, but we'll be talking about that. And then, of course, all the latest AEW and WWE news that's coming down the pike. But James, I'll start with you first, man. So what were your overall, like, fight aside, right? The quality of the fight aside, this is very important to the future of WWE is Netflix's ability to live stream a live event, right? And they have a history of having some issues. And tonight, those issues were front and center, man. So what did you think of the overall show, the Tyson versus Paul show?
I enjoyed, listen, anytime Jake Paul is going to be fighting, I'm excited because it's always like a fever dream of ridiculous stuff. And so that's what I wanted. And I felt like I kind of got it in the technical issues played into it, but man, they've had these technical issues now for the better part of a year. And they should have known this was going to be huge, but I think they probably did not know how huge it would be. I was telling Cousin Joe right before we came on the air, like, I'm hearing from wrestling fans, boxing fans, and people that do not watch fights at all. And I'm not exactly going to say everyone I know watched this fight. Everyone. Yeah. I think this is probably going to go down, if they release the numbers, as the biggest combat sports event of all time, like just pure viewers. And I feel like they're going to need to release those numbers to explain why they kind of crapped the bed there with the broadcast, because I was following Twitter trending all night, both for On Patrol Live and for this, and just buffering at one point was trending number two or three for a while, dude.
Wow.
It was the running joke throughout the night.
Yeah, I felt like I was watching something on TNA Plus. Like that was the issue that I had with like on my Brace for Impact show. Uh-huh. I had those issues for years on their old server, the Impact Plus. TNA Plus is actually a lot better now. But Joe, how was the show for you, man?
I thought so. Taking away the technical issues they had, I thought the quality looked good. You know, some of the announcer, like Cedric the Entertainer, I didn't think was a good fit. Yeah. I didn't really understand that. One of the co-CEO of MVP said that it would be the most attended women's sporting event in America. A quick Google search says that would be wrong. Because he said that, and I wanted to make a point to notate that Nebraska versus Nebraska Omaha volleyball did 92,000 people. So I did want to make that point when he said that. I thought the atmosphere was great. I was kind of hoping they would have the lights on at some point because I wanted to see if there was any empty areas. I've been to that stadium. That's a big ass stadium.
Yeah.
Huge.
And when there's empty spots, you can tell. And I wonder if that's why they kept the lights off the whole night.
I think this number, the 72,000, I think that's a Vince McMahon like worked number.
There were a lot of workers in the building.
Yeah. Mike said 40,000. I'm going to guess probably closer to like 55. If we get a turnstile count at some point, I think 55 would kind of be like they did have what would be the filled area really full. Mm-hmm. The lower bowl area. I know we looked at tickets because my brother was considering going. He wanted to check his son out of school and go down to it and eventually talked himself out of it. And a lot of the lower bowl areas did look completely sold out, but that upper bowl area is just huge, absolutely huge. So I wouldn't be surprised if that entire upper bowl area, whoever bought tickets to it, probably got moved down at some point and probably, you know, to fill in spots. Let's see here. It definitely works. Trap was as bad for a Cowboy game. Yeah, somebody in the chat said it wasn't as bad as going to a Cowboy game. I've been to a couple. I actually went to the Dallas and Detroit game a couple weeks ago, and you can genuinely really judge by how much traffic is there by what the audience is going to be. I was also there for WrestleMania a couple years ago. I went to night one, the night that Cody was there, and I think there was like a legit 60,000 people there for that. I can't remember the actual number, but I think it was about 60,000 people. And okay. I'm going to guess that this fight probably did well under 60.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But overall, like I said, I thought the atmosphere was good. I thought the undercard fight, what was it? Taylor and Serrano?
Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that fight was awesome.
Two of the best in the world.
Yeah.
They're so great.
And legitimately, like, if nothing else, I'm glad those two got a spotlight from this.
Yeah.
Like, that was probably the big thing, getting those two a spotlight, because they deserved it. They went out there and killed it.
their first fight was maybe the best female fight I'd ever seen in any in boxing or MMA. So I was really excited to see what we'd get in this one. I had a lot of buffering issues during it, but
me too.
But basically what I tweeted was I didn't see enough of this fight to know if Amanda Serrano got robbed, but if Moro says it, I'm trusting Moro on that.
I will say I like saw enough robbed. Of it. I saw enough of it, and she did get robbed.
Apparently, apparently Amanda outstruck Katie by over 100 punches.
Yeah, and Katie Taylor was definitely purposely throwing headbutts to
She lost a point, right? And I'm like, I wonder if the judges just said, "Fuck, I'm not taking a point. We're not gonna use that."
Texas notoriously has just the absolute worst athletic commission in the country. You know, they let years ago Margarito box with cement in his glove, for God's sake, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's not the best place to get a fair call.
Who was he fighting, Margarito? Who was he fighting when he had the cement? Was it Mosley?
I think it was Mosley, but I cannot remember for sure.
Okay. Yeah. But he ended up Margarito was a great fighter, but man,
he was really good.
Yeah,
he got concrete.
Yeah. It helps when you got loaded gloves, though, I guess.
Yeah,
I would imagine so.
There's not really much to talk about with the fight, but I was very skeptical. I kind of thought this whole thing was going to be a work, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. Much like the Roy Jones and Mike Tyson kind of thing that they did during the pandemic, where they're very clearly, like, Mike Tyson was very clearly pulling his punches and making sure not to hit Roy Jones in the head. For this one, though, this was a tale of Jake Paul very much could have ended this fight in the second round.
Yeah,
if he wanted to, he saw that Tyson was gassed, and then he was just he carried him for like the next six rounds, and it was honestly a bit embarrassing, really. But I mean, it's Mike Tyson, so it's like, yeah, we're kind of like the whole world is going to watch a Mike Tyson fight because he's like the most popular fighter of all time. But this was kind of a sad watch.
Do you think the plan was to carry Mike to the end the whole time? Or do you think it was a knee-jerk decision by Jake? Like, I respect this guy. I don't want to embarrass him, even though it did kind of result in the fact it was a little embarrassing.
It would not surprise me if there was some type of gentleman's agreement that was like, you know, it was like, hey, look, we can go full on, but like Mike's going to gas out after 3 minutes, which is what happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so don't embarrass Mike. And if you guys caught the end of it, I tried to watch a little bit of the promo afterwards. Mike challenged Logan. So if Jake would have killed Mike tonight, there'd be no Logan fight.
Yeah.
Man,
I don't see that Logan fight happening.
No, I totally agree with Joe on that. But also, Mike also had the benefit in this of having the 2 minute rounds instead of 3 minute rounds. I don't think he could have made the end with 3 minute rounds. And you heard the commentators very early talking about his legs. Mm-hmm. And just 3 or 4 weeks ago, it might have been as many as 6 weeks ago, when somebody asked him how his training was going, he said, "I can't walk right now."
Yeah.
And so he's like, "We'll see. We'll see." I'm like, yeah. So for the whole thing, I've been telling people, I don't think Mike has a chance. Like, everybody kind of has a puncher's chance. Strength's the last thing to go, but he really never had a chance in this. And I was shocked at the amount of people either working saying Mike was going to crush him, or there's a lot of fans out there who really believed a 58-year-old man could go in against not a great boxer, I think clearly in Jake Paul, but an athlete at the prime of his career.
A 27-year-old who is actively boxing like three times a year right now.
Yes.
And he might not be boxing against great opponents. Yeah, he might not be boxing against great opponents, you know what I mean? But he's still actively training and boxing all the time. And Mike Tyson's 58 years old. And and he was moving like he was 58. Now, he looked great. And God bless Texas for not testing for steroids, because they ruined the whole thing. But clearly Mike Tyson was on a little bit of that, you know, HGH, probably some 10 cc's of Dianabol a day. Like, he was jacked.
First of all, Mike, how dare you? Second of all, the man is simply saying his prayers and taking his vitamins like the legendary Hulk Hogan.
They are good friends. They are good friends from what I've told. I will say, I think 54-year-old Mike Tyson, because I watched that Roy Jones Jr. fight, I think 54-year-old Mike Tyson would have knocked out this Jake Paul.
I don't think so. I do, because
I watched that fight. Tyson moved around a lot better. His head movement is good. It still looked good tonight. He still knew when to duck and dive and move.
When Tyson was in there with Roy Jones, Roy Jones isn't much younger. Roy Jones was a lot slower, so therefore Mike looks a lot faster. And also, like, Mike was never in any danger of being hit because they agreed to not hit each other.
Yeah. Right? It's not necessarily the speed. It was just the fact that after the first round, Tyson just stood in one spot and would slowly move. And that Roy Jones Jr. match, he was able to bounce around. He was able to move around. It wasn't super fast. He doesn't need to be super fast. Jake Paul also has no cardio. He's shown that in every fight that he has. He was gassed in there tonight. You could tell in the second round he was already sweating up.
Yeah.
I mean, he's roided out and he's got no cardio.
Yeah.
I think you make a really good point that he's definitely gone downhill movement-wise in the last 4 years for sure.
Yeah.
I think that's
clear. You could tell it, and Roy Jones was pointing it out. You could tell in the first round, he was bouncing around a little bit. He tried to have some movement. When he came out in that second round, he was flat-footed. Yeah. You know, he tried to bounce around, but he lost it pretty quick. And he would try every round at least for a few seconds.
Yeah. He would come out in every round, and he would just kind of like, he had a little bit of gas tank left. And then he would do the classic Tyson kind of head movement where he's kind of doing that, like what we all saw growing up. And then he'd be gassed after a couple of those movements, and he'd throw a couple of punches, and he was done.
They should have allowed oxygen tanks in the corner. That would have made the fight way better.
Yeah, well, I mean, they allowed steroids. Why wouldn't they allow oxygen tanks?
Exactly. I mean, and they took it from 3 minutes to two. Like, you're already giving, like, if you're going to go and work all the way, just go and work. Give them oxygen.
Yeah.
It feels a lot to me like how they, you know, they're letting them do steroids. They're doing the two-minute rounds. It feels a lot to me like the UFC tomorrow night just saying, oh, we have the greatest eye poker of all time.
Yeah.
Let's allow the eye poke gloves back.
Just a day after John Jones says he doesn't like the gloves, magically they're just dropping them all together.
Yeah.
And nobody knows why.
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah. And I have a feeling they're going to be completely back the very next show. I think nothing said today was true.
So they did say – there is data that shows with the switch to the new MMA gloves, knockouts are down.
Yeah.
And if they would have just came out and said that like 2 months ago, like, hey, we're switching back to the old gloves because we've shown that knockouts are down and they don't really prevent eye pokes as much as they were hoping.
Yeah.
Then it wouldn't have been a big deal. But it was just the fact that they waited until John Jones complained.
Yeah.
And then they're like, all right, well, let's get rid of them.
It's fascinating to me that Jones has that much power in the UFC when the guy only fights every couple of years, and he's a very big draw, don't get me wrong, but he's not like Conor McGregor.
He was never the million pay-per-view guy.
No,
he was always like a little above a Chael level at like 850, something like that, but he was never the guy. But Dana just loves him no matter how many cars he wrecks.
Well, he's the greatest. He is like legitimately the greatest fighter Dana ever had, right?
Yes.
And he's going to capitulate to great fighters. And he's always kind of looked out for John Jones, no matter what the hell he was getting himself into.
Which is a full-time job in and of itself.
What I think it is in terms of his power with UFC, I compare him a lot to, for totally different reasons, but he's UFC's John Cena in that he draws enough and you know he's not going to leave you. He's not going to go and try to be a boxer. He's not going to go and try and just leave you high and dry.
Well, the difference is with John Cena, you never thought John Cena was going to jail. And
that's why I said John for totally Jones, different reasons. Story.
So John Jones can leave you, but for jail, that's where he could go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see a lot of similarities between the UFC now and WWE from like 2004 to when Vince left, in terms of trying to create the brand as the star, as opposed to creating stars, because Dana really, I think he got spurned by McGregor becoming as big as he was and Rousey becoming as big as she was and then leaving him. And then he had nobody else to bring the money in. And I felt a lot like when Rock and Austin left, Vince had nobody to bring the money in. So try to create the brand. And then you have one guy, is not going to leave you. Like, I think Dana will be there.
I think Dana was so burned by Rousey and Connor that he's almost intentionally tried to not build stars.
Yeah.
On the same level since then.
Well, and he's tried to cut off their negotiating power, which is what he did with Francis Ngannou. Sure. Mm-hmm. He said, fuck you, go. Like, I'm not meeting any of your demands. Go to PFL. They're not going to do anything with you that's going to make you guys, that's going to make them any money. And unfortunately, he was right, because, like, nobody watched Ngannou's latest fight with PFL.
Yeah. It's a shame that fight didn't happen after the Tyson Fury fight instead of after the Anthony Joshua fight.
Yeah.
That's a real shame.
Yeah, I do wonder if it would have – I'm not sure how much more money, but on Ngannou's side, he still has made more money because of the Tyson Fury and the Anthony Joshua fight. So he still came out the winner, even though Dana White denies that 100%.
Now that Jake Paul's a heavyweight, he should fight Francis. I think I would like to see that.
I would actually, and because I pirate most things, I would pay pay-per-view money to see Jake Paul fight Francis Ngannou. You know what? I think Jake Paul could take him, and I think he should he should put his money where his mouth is.
Yeah, hey Jake, you should fight Francis. He a little bitch. You can beat him up. Come on, buddy.
Yeah.
Come on, you take Francis.
He got knocked out by Joshua. Like, yeah. Should Come be on. Easy for Jake Paul, the problem child.
we'll put a bow on this whole Tyson thing, because again, we are on the Voices of Wrestling Network. But I find this to be so fascinating. This whole thing. It like James said it best. This is probably the most watched combat sports event of all time, because we're talking about a worldwide audience. Mm-hmm. I think Netflix has like over 100 million subscribers, right? I mean, they're
worldwide, I think it's 140 million.
140 million. So we're probably looking at upwards of who knows how many millions. I'm really anxious to see just how many people watch this whole thing. I mean, we could be looking at
282 million worldwide subscribers. So they are far past what even I thought.
So what do we think is 75 million?
I honestly think this could hit 100 million just 100 because million. Everyone I know watched this. Everyone. No. I mean, people that only follow me from Haunted Live on Travel Channel, HGTV people that have no connection to the combat sports world. I'm hearing from all of them tonight because they remember that I talk about fights. Well, I've been shocked. Like,
Well, and the thing is that
tonight I'll hear from 15 people. I probably heard from 50 people tonight.
Well, the thing is that Tyson, he's not just a boxing celebrity. He is like a worldwide phenomenon.
Yeah.
He's the greatest
right now.
Yeah. He was the greatest pay-per-view draw of all time. I think eventually he was surpassed, but his name only got bigger. And then he got put into movies. He did a little bit of wrestling. He is like a cultural figure. He is, you know, next to Muhammad Ali, one of the famous boxers of all time. And for him to come back and I got to hand it to Netflix. The countdown show that they did for this thing was incredible. It was almost, it was as good as the De La Hoya Mayweather countdown show that really kind of brought boxing back into prominence. Do you remember that, James? For their fight? Boxing had been dying for years, like, because Tyson was on his way out and these guys were lighter weight guys. And nobody really knew that it would draw any money, but that whole documentary series that they did for the fight,
it changed really everything.
Changed the dynamic of the sport. And next thing you know, boxing is back to being a pay-per-view juggernaut, and Floyd Mayweather became the king, right?
Yeah.
And Tyson was bigger than Floyd. Tyson was way bigger than Floyd.
Let me ask this.
Yeah.
So, streaming issues, kind of a BS main event that, you know, it wasn't a real fight.
Right.
Do you think this was good for boxing? Because I think outside of the streaming issues, I think people that tuned in, they saw a really good fight in Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano, and they saw a very big spectacle basically for free. Yeah. If Netflix puts more boxing on, do you think more people are going to tune in? Do you think this was good for the sport?
I do. I think that say what you want about Jake Paul. I think he's a clown as far as like a boxer.
The most successful douche of all time.
Yeah, but that's his persona. I don't really think that his persona and him in real life are too far apart. Like I think a lot of that's just really him. But he has done a good job of promoting boxing. And what I mean by that is he putting people on the card to highlight them. And I think Joe said it best with Taylor and Serrano highlighting them, getting them on the card. And then the fight that was on right before that, I thought was an incredible fight too. The judges were weird in that fight.
By the way, where are the names here? Somebody put them in the, basically the champion was -1400.
Yeah.
And the underdog was +700. This was a huge underdog to come back and almost win that fight and to knock down the champ. That was a really, that was a really good fight as well for people that tuned in for the whole thing.
Yeah. I would definitely like to see Netflix follow up with another boxing event and a real one. Like, you're probably not going to get a Tyson Fury fight, but try to get an Anthony Joshua fight, try to get another big name that's going to deliver a real main event. They have the money.
Yeah.
Like they'll watch.
Yeah. I think Netflix can get Canelo.
Yeah.
Canelo doesn't sign long-term deals. I think they could put Canelo on top.
Good point.
And if Jake Paul was really serious, he would fight Canelo. Canelo would kill him. Canelo would murder him. Would be like boom,
let's
boom.
Just have Jake Paul,
like, that's what would happen. But
let's just have Jake Paul run a gauntlet and just keep fighting bigger and bigger opponents until he eventually gets to Canelo and Ngannou.
Like, see, now you've just taken me back to the WCW days when they had people run the gauntlet and have to fight like six guys or whatever.
Everybody loves a good gauntlet.
Just threw me back. Yeah.
Yeah. But go ahead, James.
Oh, I was just saying that Bobby the Brain Heenan said that in the post-fight press conference or the post-fight interview, Jake Paul said 120 million people were watching. Of course, there's probably some hyperbole to that, but I bet it's minimum 75, which your guess.
I would put the over under at 75. That's what I would do.
Yeah.
And anything that Jake Paul says, you have to discount about 80% of what he says. You're pretty well close to the truth at that point. Mm-hmm. He is very much a promoter. He's mostly full of shit. Transferring Heat makes a good point here. Saudi can make it happen. So Saudi can get anything done, I think. And so if Saudi's willing to pony up a bunch of money and Netflix is willing to pony up a bunch of money, I think you can make any fight in the world that you want. It doesn't matter who it is.
Fury Usyk 2 on Netflix.
Yeah.
If Saudi wants people to watch it, that would be the way to do it.
Yeah. They could do like here's the challenge though, is I don't want them to raise the prices. I'm already spending like $17 a month on this fucking Netflix because my kid needs Gabby's Dollhouse. And now I've started to watch a bunch of the content on there. Dude, I just watched the Elvis documentary, the latest one. It is insane. Really good.
Really good.
Then there's a George Knapp documentary on here called Investigation Alien. Tremendous. Everybody should go check
it out. I didn't know
there
was a George Knapp doc.
Dude, it's a six-parter, bro. You got to check
that
out.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Yeah. I'm all in on that,
man. Yeah, you're a George Knapp guy. I'm surprised you didn't know that already.
I've been work's killing me, man. Killing me.
I feel you there. All right. I know a lot. Let me get to the chat real quick, and then we're going to head to we're going to talk about the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame. So Drew101 says, I imagine they papered the number, but the crowd size looks similar to Errol Spence fights that have drawn about 45,000 to 50,000. That was what I was thinking it would be. But again, Joe said, they didn't really turn on the lights. And I think that is I think that there's a reason for that. Transferring Heat turnstile count for WrestleMania 32 was 80,709, according to Thurston. So I wonder if somebody actually goes to get the turnstile count on here. Let's see. See, Dobby agrees with Joe. Get the fuck out of here, Dobby. Don't agree with Joe. Tyson looks so much better against Jones Jr. Was much more mobile. Yeah, well, you know, but Tyson also almost died on a plane this year. So a lot's happened in 4 years, and a lot of drugs have been taken.
A big 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Keeper Wilson said they had a massive influx of subs, like they need it, right?
Yeah.
But this was huge. I think that this was huge for Netflix, and I think the NFL on Christmas is going to be, like, really big, too. Mm-hmm.
They got two games, right?
They have two Christmas Day games, that are exclusive to Netflix, which is
they can't mess that up. Like NFL, you cannot.
Yeah, if they have the buffering issues, Netflix might burn that night. Like,
yeah,
football fans don't enjoy much in life, but they have their football. So,
hey, I mean, Joe, it's got to be perfect.
Joe, did you steal this one, or were you just like watching legit on Netflix?
Oh no, I stole it.
Okay, how was your stolen feed? Your stolen feed?
Yeah, it didn't buffer a single time. I didn't know. I didn't know people were having issues until Rocky called me and he's like, "Hey, are you watching the fight?" I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "Is your Netflix buffering?" I was like, "What are you talking about? I don't pay for Netflix."
Like, I was watching the Netflix feed and it kept buffering, and I was like, "This reminds me of all the UFCs that I've stolen, right, with the buffering issues." But
yeah, somebody DM'd me. This feels like watching watching the Pacquiao fights on Periscope back in the day.
It felt like watching wrestling pay-per-view on the scrambled channel on cable, or like when you're trying to watch some Skinamax, like waiting for a titty to fly across the screen. Yeah. Like that's kind of what it reminded me of.
Yeah.
But hey, and we kind of got that with Mike Tyson's bare ass.
We did get Mike Tyson's bare ass.
Dude, that was the funniest shit I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Like, unbuffered just in time for that.
Yeah. Who was it that put it? I think it was Dave Portnoy, wasn't it? Let me look up.
Portnoy had some great tweets tonight, man.
Yeah, he's really funny. I don't care what anybody says about him; he makes me laugh. But let's see, he had the really good one of the Tyson's ass. Hold on, and if you guys are wondering if I'm going to pull this up, yes, I am. We're all going to watch this together.
Now we're talking.
Yeah, who doesn't want to see Tyson's ass? He's only 60-year-old guy. Look, there he goes. Gives a kiss, and there's his ass.
Oh, man.
Oh, that's funny.
That 60-year-old ass looks better than my ass will have ever looked at any point in my life. Birth to the day I die.
Yeah. Yeah. No shit. All right. Let's get to our next story, man. And I'm excited to have you guys talk about this. James, are you a Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame voter?
I'm not, and I definitely should be, and I wish I was.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the 2024 Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame inductees, as aggregated here by Russell Purist, but I know they're pretty good at that. And here's our Hall of Famers. We got Roman Reigns, the Young Bucks, Shingo Takagi, my guy Paul Orndorff, which I'm really excited about, Johnny Saint, Shima, Bobby Davis, Los Hermanos de Amitas, and Johnny Rougeau. I mean, very clearly the top two on the list. I think there was a little bit of controversy surrounding both these acts. First, Roman Reigns. For some reason, and even my bosses at the Voices of Wrestling, Joe and Rich, they didn't vote for him either. And I think the big part of the reason why people don't want to vote for him is because, yeah, he was on top in the WWE for a long time, but when you took him out, numbers didn't really change. And so people are like, well, was he really a draw? And a lot of people feel like the matches aren't any good. I happen to disagree. I've kind of always been a fan of his. I went to two WrestleManias and he was headlining both of them. And I feel like he is a big draw. And when he came back and he turned heel, the bloodline has been huge for WWE. So I just don't really see the argument against Roman Reigns, but what do you guys think? James, I'll start with you. What do you think about Roman being a Hall of Famer?
I was as anti-Roman as you could get for the longest time, but he's the biggest star in the business right now, and he is the integral part of one of the greatest storylines told in modern wrestling history, and some would argue wrestling history. This entire thing has been the story for, what, 3-4 years now?
Yeah.
4 years.
Yeah. That's insane that we have anything in WWE going for 4 years, and not only that it's going for 4 years, but it's the story. Mm-hmm. All the other major stories wrap into it, and to me, I would have voted for him. I absolutely would have voted for him, even though I was a huge skeptic for years on Roman Reigns.
Yeah, because you were, we'll be honest, you're like AW guy probably, predominantly,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I hated on WWE for a long time. Even when I was a kid, I loved WCW. I watched WWE, but I never thought it was as good as WCW back in the day. But listen, when they do something right, I got to give them credit. And this has been phenomenal. And he's the guy on top, and he's been the guy on top for a long time. And I think this is a kind of a I don't want to say a golden age, but this is they're doing WWE right now is better than I think it's been in at least a decade. And he's the top guy and the top story in the top promotion in the world right now.
Yeah. Joe, what do you think? What do you make of the criticisms of Roman Reigns? Is there valid criticism out there? And what do you think about him making the Hall of Fame?
So I think there could be valid criticism in terms of the match quality. I really do think his matches, because they are very slow paced and story and emotion driven, that doesn't fit a lot of what the modern style is. A lot of the modern stuff is very fast paced, hard hitting, and Roman doesn't do that. But when you look at his whole career, like the Bloodline stuff, obviously, as James mentioned, but the Shield stuff, like the moment the Shield stepped onto Monday Night Raw, they were the most overact in wrestling from that moment. And Roman Reigns was a rookie, a couple years in NXT that had barely any developmental at all. If you look at his entire resume, you know, people will say the numbers didn't drop much, but they did drop when Roman left. SmackDown ratings did go down when Roman left. Roman's quarter hour numbers are higher. Yep. Roman and the OTC, top merch seller. The Bloodline stuff, top merch seller. He is probably the hottest babyface in all of wrestling right now while still being a jackass heel. he is a big star. And I know the knock on him was, well, WWE can do that with anybody. They can make anybody the top star.
No.
People say that, but...
No, people do, yeah.
They weren't able to... WWE wasn't able to do that. And no, because the point is Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
For years.
Yeah.
I've always liked Roman. I didn't think he would ever reach his potential because of Vince McMahon. And he's shown, I think, what he's always had in terms of being a top star. And Roman has helped make other guys bigger stars. Jimmy and Jey Uso are bigger stars because of Roman Reigns. Sami Zayn is a bigger star because of Roman Reigns. Cody Rhodes is a bigger star because of Roman Reigns. Now, I do think Cody would have been a star without him, but Cody needed somebody like Roman Reigns and the character of Roman Reigns to be a true transcendent main event babyface.
He legitimized him as a main eventer.
Exactly. Yes. I think Roman's not done. I think he's going to make Jacob Fatu a big star. Jacob Fatu probably could have been a big star without him, but you can tell every time they interact, and tonight on SmackDown, when they had a stare down on SmackDown, and that crowd went wild for it. They want that so bad. So looking at his entire resume of what he's done for the company, his merch numbers, his actual drawing power, and helping others become stars, I think it's hard to not put him in.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, and for the argument that that they could do that with anybody, that is not true. Because they have tried. Like, yeah, they tried with Roman Reigns for years. They eventually got him. They're trying with Solo. It's not working with him. Jacob Fatu has outshined Solo. I think everybody could agree with that. Look, they tried it with Mr. Kennedy. They tried it with Jack Swagger. They tried it with Drew McIntyre. He failed. He had to leave. Right. Yeah. And then he came back. You know what I mean? There's been a lot of people that they've tried with, and then ultimately failed, and those guys had to go somewhere else, and they're around on the indies right now, or they're lower card acts and things like that. Yeah. So they can't just make anybody a top guy. It's the same stupid argument. I'm gonna be on my soapbox here for a second, where people say that anybody that Kyle Shanahan has as quarterback is going to be able to win and run that system. That is horse shit, because I've seen it happen. It didn't happen with Brian Hoyer. Couldn't happen with Nick Mullins, CJ Beathard, Josh Johnson in the fucking NFC Championship game. Couldn't happen. He put Christian McCaffrey out there, couldn't do it as a quarterback. He's only been able to win with a couple of different quarterbacks, but he makes those quarterbacks better, right? Mm-hmm. And, and that's things like, the WWE system has been very beneficial to Roman Reigns, right? I don't think Roman Reigns could have made it in other promotions, but he made it here, and he is essentially undeniable at this point. I don't see the argument against him. I really just don't.
To me, there's a lot of backlash about them pushing him down people's throats too early. But the same thing happened with The Rock. There was a huge backlash against Rocky Maivia early on when they were pushing him hard, and they pushed both of them hard because they saw the potential, and both of them eventually transcended and got over. I'm not saying he's The Rock, but it was a very similar circumstance where there was a lot of pushback early with The Rock, the same way there was with Roman Reigns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. John Muse is in the chat. Thank you for being here, John. He says, the creative arguments against Roman end when you ask, what was Sammy's goal? And what was Cody's goal? Everything that those two guys were doing, right, revolved around Roman. Roman was the straw that stirs the drink. That was the entire thing. Other people contributed to the success of the Bloodline. The Bloodline would not have been as successful without Roman Reigns, right? Mm-hmm. And it still wouldn't be as successful without Roman Reigns. He is the reason why it's successful. And the whole company revolved around that storyline for years, and its turnaround happened because of that storyline. And AEW's downturn kind of happened because of that storyline, because they got so hot, and there's only so much TV, almost so much wrestling that one person can watch. And a lot of people chose them over AEW because they
very few moments, and maybe somebody can point another one out, but Sammy hitting Roman in the back with the chair is the only moment I've seen in wrestling break the microphones.
Yeah.
Like their microphones and their TV mics busted that night. And, you know, they still had some, obviously, but
yeah,
the moment was that big. Like, the main event match wasn't that good. You know, a lot of people probably would tell you it was a pretty average to boring match.
Yeah.
I think Dave, even in the Observer, called it a 3-star match with a 5-star, 5-star angle.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah.
And but Roman has those. He has the moments that the entire arena or stadium gravitate to. When he came back at SummerSlam, the match Cody and Solo was sucking at that point. It was boring. Cody and Solo ended up having a couple pretty good matches later, but that one, it was boring. But once Roman's music hit, the entire vibe changed, the atmosphere changed. There are very few people who can walk into a stadium right now for a wrestling show and the entire stadium gravitates towards that one person.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. You know, I was at the WrestleMania where Roman beat Cody in LA, and everybody uses that against Roman. He's not the booker. I'm sure he has a lot to do with it. Right. And I'm sure he was a part of that decision, but ultimately there was one person in charge that time. But People keep saying that people were leaving the stadium like super pissed and disappointed and like swore off wrestling. That didn't happen in my section. My section was holding up their ones. They were excited. They were happy that Roman beat Cody, right? Roman's a megastar. Let's go on to the next act, which is another controversial one. And I just don't see the controversy. JD didn't even vote for the Young Bucks, but I voted for them. I felt like Roman Reigns and Young Bucks, and I'll get to the rest of the other people that I voted for because some didn't make it, but I thought Roman Reigns and the Young Bucks were no-brainers. But the Young Bucks have been on the ballot for a while, and you know, they draw a lot of heat among the retired wrestler community. They're like in the bottom 10 of the retired wrestler community. They just don't like old wrestlers, just do not like the Young Bucks. But the journalists and some of the modern wrestlers all voted them in. They got in with, let me see, 61% of the vote. They got 280 votes. That was up from last year's 55%. So they almost made the cut last year. But what do you think of the Young Bucks, James? Do you think there's a really good argument against the Young Bucks not being Hall of Famers?
I don't. I just think it's old curmudgeons not liking the new style. They're the king of flip-de-doos, you know, and getting in their moves. But they've changed wrestling. They kind of defined the tag team scene for over a decade. And then, of course, Dave Meltzer's tweet had them pack an arena with over 10,000 people with nothing but indie stars. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, they went on to found AEW, the first real threat to WWE in, what, 20 years? Yeah. To me, there's no question that they are, as wrestlers and as influential movers in the pro wrestling community, as both, they should have been in the Hall of Fame for sure.
And not to mention, like, nobody has as many Tag Team of the Year awards as the Young Bucks. They might as well, at this point, name the award after them, much like Dave Meltzer named the Technical Wrestler Award after Bryan Danielson. I think there's an argument to be made that you can name the Tag Team of the Year after the Young Bucks.
Well, look at, like, look at Private Party. They lost that match early in AEW to Private Party, and everybody started talking about how Private Party was the next big thing. They haven't done anything since then. No. Like, the Young Bucks made them look like $1 million, and they make so many tag teams look like $1 million. And listen, they are not my favorite style, not even close. I'm a Briscoes guy. I'm an NWA Blood and Guts guy.
But FTR. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But they keep having some of the best tag matches I've ever seen, the best cage matches I've ever seen. They're always there putting on some of the best shows I've ever seen, even though they're not my style.
Joe, what do you think about the Young Bucks going in?
I think the big thing with them is what they did outside of the bell to bell stuff. I'm hard on the Young Bucks a lot. There's a lot of their wrestling matches I don't like because I do feel it's very copy and paste of the same matches they were having in PWG. But with that being said, the merchandise that they brought to indie wrestling, the packed arenas that they were able, like Ring of Honor was doing genuinely well in their ticket sales with the Young Bucks as the top act. As James said, there was, 10 to 15 years, pretty much after the Hardys broke down, the Dudleys were outside of the WWE, that there just wasn't legitimate tag team wrestling on TV.
On the major stage, yeah.
Yeah, on the bigger stage. Like, WWE was just throwing guys together to advance single storylines later. The Young Bucks really breathed life back into tag team wrestling. I love tag team wrestling. And the Young Bucks saved the idea of tag team wrestling on a bigger scale in the United States.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree. Now, Joe, you're the reason right now that I am currently blocked by the Young Bucks. because my Twitter account used to be, so Joe and I had a podcast back in 2017. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so we would both be tweeting from the same account. And then and he just was talking mad shit to the Young Bucks on him. What the fuck? And then they blocked me. And they blocked the account. Well, then, we gained such a following on that account, like, years later, I had control over it. So I just deleted my personal account, and I made the podcast account my account. But because of that, I'm blocked by CM Punk and the Young Bucks.
I remember the exact tweet that got me blocked by CM Punk also. Yeah. I just want to say, ESPN put out a list of pro wrestlers who turned to be professional UFC fighters, and they had CM Punk on the list, and he hadn't fought in the UFC yet. And I just retweeted it, and I said, can you really call Punk a UFC fighter? He hasn't fought yet. And he didn't fight for another year after that. That tweet got me blocked by CM Punk.
Well,
even in 2024, can we really say he's ever fought in the UFC, technically?
Hey.
You know what? I thought that it was the time. I can't remember if it was you or me, but it was CM Punk was about to face he was announced for a fight. They didn't know who his opponent was. And it says his opponent was TBD. And it said CM Punk's scheduled to face TBD. TBD currently favored. And I thought that was the tweet. I thought that was the tweet. But either way, it was
CM Punk. Yeah, going back to the Young Bucks, just what they've done for pro wrestling in general. Like I said, the merchandise, bringing merchandise to the indies and making the indies a legitimate chance for people to make money, I really don't think happens. Like, the Young Bucks and Matt Cardona really getting onto social media and breathing life into social media, merchandise that way, I really think makes them deserving on that alone. Even if you, like, objectively, again, I don't like their style all the time, but they still have great matches all the time. You know, looking at it from an objective point of view, the Young Bucks versus Kenny Omega and Adam Page, probably one of the greatest tag matches of all time. I mean, top three.
Yeah. That one match of the year, and for a tag team match to win match of the year, that's pretty rare.
The first game. FTR match they had is the only time, actually one of two times, I actually paid money to watch an AEW pay-per-view event because I wanted to watch FTR, who was my favorite tag team at the time, wrestle who everybody else said was the best tag team in the world. And I wanted to make sure, you know, it didn't buffer. It was on pay-per-view. I paid $45 for it or however much it was. That doesn't happen with any other tag team, but the Young Bucks made stuff like that happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. There, you know, there are arguments out there. I think that one of the arguments that JD had, and I think Transferring Heat brought it up here. Let's see. No, hold on. Not that one. Oh, on a national stage, the Young Bucks, no bueno. They run off viewers. Go look at their quarter hours, but I'm a hater. So that there is some truth to that. Mm-hmm. So since they've been in AEW, they have not been the top draw in the company. And in fact, their quarter hours have gone down at certain times. They have not been a top act. They've only main evented, I think, one pay-per-view, and that was the Sting one. Turned out to be a fucking monster, right, of a pay-per-view. And, like, not only at the box office, but at the pay-per-view. And, of course, it was a five-star match and Sting's final match. I think they deserve the Hall of Fame just for that. But there is that. So there is truth to that, that they have not been big draws for AEW since AEW's come on because other people have just surpassed them. Mm-hmm. This latest run that they're on, with the Okada stuff and them doing the pile driver to Tony Khan, has flopped majorly, and their latest run as heels has been a big flop, and I think people are holding that against them. And you know, they had the CM Punk stuff, which I don't think should factor into anything. But the one argument that I think I hear a lot of the old time wrestlers say is that it's not that they just have their style that I don't like; it's that their style has permeated into other people. They have been influential in that aspect, to where a lot of people are now copying the Young Bucks. You have a bunch of Young Bucks clones out there doing more matches that I don't like. And that's kind of the argument from the old head wrestlers. But their argument doesn't matter anymore because the Young Bucks are in. They crossed the threshold, so the protest votes are out. The next guy I want to talk about, so Shingo, I think we all can agree, we love Shingo. Mm-hmm. People are wondering, like, why Shingo would get in and not Cody Rhodes. Well, you guys got to understand, and Shima too. So the way that it's broke down in different categories, and you have to get 70 or 60% of your category. So the Japanese category this year, I think, was kind of weak. That doesn't mean that Shima and Shingo don't deserve to go in. I'm not saying that, but that's why you're seeing them go in and not Cody Rhodes and not CM Punk and people like that. But Shingo, I think, is tremendous. But Paul Orndorff was a great addition. I'm glad that he made it in. He had been on and off the ballot for years, and so JD and I really pushed hard for him to go in. I know John Muse is a big fan of his. I know a lot of other people that I really respect. We're pushing for Paul Orndorff. A lot of people, just when they think of Paul Orndorff, they think of his WWF run in the 80s, but they're missing out on his Memphis run, his Florida run, his Mid-Atlantic run, and his Georgia Championship Wrestling run, his Mid-South run, where he was a main eventer in all those territories.
Yeah.
Doing tremendous business everywhere. So I'm really glad that Paul weighed in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know if you've seen, but Paul Orndorff's son actually retweeted and was very thankful and grateful that, you know, Paul Orndorff got in. So, because there are some people who say, well, this Hall of Fame doesn't really mean anything. Why does it matter? To Paul Orndorff's son, it clearly mattered. Yeah. It was clearly an honor to him that his dad was honored. So I think that's really cool. And it was nice to see that today.
Yeah.
There's so many guys from his era who aren't appreciated because they're remembered for their WWE years. Okay. For instance, the Junkyard Dog wasn't the same guy that he was in Mid-South. A lot of these guys weren't the same guys they were in the territory days.
Yeah, I mean, even Dusty Rhodes might be one of the bigger ones.
Yeah,
in terms of that, you know, a lot of people just remember the polka dots. And the dancing, and may not know if you only knew him from WWF. Like, Dusty Rhodes was a really big deal, and so yeah, I could absolutely see that.
Yeah. Speaking of Junkyard Dog, man, he didn't get it in this year, but I'm hoping he does next year. And then the last guy I want to talk about is Bobby Davis. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Bobby Davis, but he was the manager for Nature Boy Buddy Rogers, and he was the kind of the the prototype for managers going forward. He was a big draw as a manager, so tons of big houses managing Buddy Rogers all over the country while he was the NWA champion. So I was really proud that I voted for him because he made it by one vote this year. And I'm going to go ahead and take credit for that one because this is my first year voting. So if anybody wants to give anybody credit for Bobby Davis going in, obviously give Bobby Davis credit. Yeah. Give Ethan Tyler credit, who did a really great job promoting Bobby and pushing his case forward online. But mostly give me credit because I'm on the I get the vote now, and he made it by one vote.
That one vote mattered.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys know anything about Bobby Davis, or should I just move on?
Only what I've heard. I believe you, I think you and JD did a show talking about the Hall of Fame, and you did a pretty good breakdown of him, but yeah. Only from what I've heard from you.
James, you're muted, buddy. Oh, he is still muted.
Hope his mic didn't unplug.
Yeah, it says I can't unmic. It says I can't unmute my guest. That's okay. James is going to work on that. So I do want to talk about Cody Rhodes and CM Punk not making it. I don't quite understand that one. So the modern US category was a really tough one. It was super stacked and super loaded. And so that's why they didn't go in. Because there was so many people that you could have voted for in that category. I think they were canceling each other out.
Yeah.
But I'll go to the stats here. So CM Punk was he got 238 votes. He's a 52%. So you need to get 60. I think he's going to go in next year.
Yeah.
I think he gets it. Now, Cody Rhodes, on the other hand, was down to 48.1. I think it's going to be tough sledding for him going forward.
Now, was this Cody's debut on the ballot?
Yeah, this is Cody's first ballot. And, okay. And James, you're good. You can chime in here. This is Cody's first ballot. What do you think about Cody Rhodes and CM Punk not making it this year, James?
I can see. First of all, I am also a big CM Punk hater, but I would have voted for CM Punk. I think he's been a major deal in two separate eras right now. I can see holding off on Cody Rhodes for a little while. I think he's got a few more years to prove what he can do on the big stage. He's doing it really well right now. I'd like to see a few more years out of him. And again, I like Cody Rhodes more than I like CM Punk, but I probably would have voted Punk and not Cody this time. I hate to say.
So my thing with Punk is he really was the prototype for giving not bodybuilders a chance in the major market of pro wrestling. Like, without CM Punk getting as over as he did, does Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson, become a main eventer in WWE that leads to him being a big star? Does Seth Rollins happen? You know, so like CM Punk really was a catalyst for that. Also, again, really big before WWE, you know, big in terms of the size of what he could be with Ring of Honor, big in WWE. Look at the numbers for AEW when Punk gets there compared to after Punk leaves.
Yeah,
that's, I think, is something else that should be in his favor. I do think a lot of people probably hold the way he left AEW against him, just as like a little personal grudge. But you know, it is what it is. It happened and it's done. Him back in WWE again, the numbers show when he's there, things are better. I think he should get in. If I had a vote, I would have voted for him this year. Cody, I would like to see another year or two, but also, again, his contributions to making AEW exist, him kind of being the face of the original All In was a really huge deal. Like, you know, they wanted 10,000. I think they got 15,000.
Yep.
I don't know if a lot of AEW, if that ever happens without Cody Rhodes. You know, and there was other guys it absolutely required. Yeah. But Cody was a catalyst for that.
Cody was a draw in Ring of Honor, and it was him and the Young Bucks, but Cody was very much a big draw for them. Cody was a draw all over the indies. Mm-hmm. He was a draw for AEW. He's been one of the biggest draws in WWE history. He's headlined some of the biggest gates that they've ever had, and they're on a run of major arena sellouts, and he has been the catalyst. I felt like he was a no-brainer first ballot of Hall of Famer, but some people don't. Some people, when they look at first ballot, they're looking at Hulk Hogan, right?
Yeah.
And he is not Hulk Hogan.
And there's only, was it like 10 or 15 first ballot Hall of Famers?
Yeah.
I know like Austin, Rock, I think Kurt Angle, Okada.
Oh yeah.
Nakamura was one. I looked at the list earlier today. So there's not many. That is a hard list to crack.
And I can see a number of people simply saying, love him. He deserves to be there, but he's not first ballot. Yeah. I'll vote for him next year or the year after. Yeah. I 100% see that. And Joe, you made an excellent point in that for years it was 6'4", 240 if you want to be in WWE. And he was the leader of that movement. He was the guy that changed the game to allow non 6'4", 240 guys to make it in. And that's changed wrestling in such a massive way, all of pro wrestling, that it really can't be understated. I'm really glad you brought that up. I wasn't even thinking about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. So we only got a couple stories left. We're coming up on our 60 minutes. Thank you to Joe and for James for being here. We've been here for almost 60 minutes, but they've been in the green room for a little while. I had to take care of my son for a little bit. So I had the baby was kind of taking up a little bit of the time there, but I was able to get him back to his mama. But last couple of stories here. I want to get your guys' take on this. Speedball Mike Bailey has left TNA. His contract expired on November 1st, apparently. I thought he was in through December, and he actually had started a feud on TV with Trent Seven a couple weeks ago, but he was not at the latest tapings, and he is not coming back to TNA, apparently. Then maybe that can change. I don't know. But Sean Ross Sapp had a report out, I believe it was today, that Speedball is headed towards AEW, which I think is a perfect fit for a guy like Speedball. James, what do you think make a Speedball going to AEW?
I'm really excited about it. I think AEW needs some interesting fresh blood. And Speedball Mike Bailey is one of the best out there on the indies and, well, in TNA. If you've just watched WrestleMania weekends over the last few years, you've seen 45 Speedball Mike Bailey matches. And they're all really good. I literally think I saw 12 Speedball matches last WrestleMania weekend, and it's been the same way for 2 or 3 years. I've been really out on AEW over the last year. I've not been doing the boom. And that is one of the, and I guarantee you when he makes his debut, I will be there watching. And I have not watched a lot of AEW for a little while now because I've not liked the product.
Go ahead, Joe.
I think AEW is a good spot for him. I was hoping to see him do a little bit in New Japan, some of the best of Super Junior stuff over there. So kind of disappointed, but with that being said, AEW is a great fit for him. I really want to see him have a match with Ricochet. That's kind of been something I've been hoping for. So I think that would be a good for both of them. Just don't give either of them a microphone. Just like kind of just throw them out there and let them wrestle. I don't need to hear either of them talk. But yeah, I think AEW is the right fit for him.
Yeah, I think so too. I was, you know, I knew that that TNA was not going to be able to keep him because they just don't have the resources. He had been there for 3 years. He had a really good run in TNA. He was in a lot of big matches for them. He actually won the X Division title in front of the biggest audience that TNA had, like live attended audience. It was in Montreal in his hometown in the co-main event against Mustafa Ali. And he was a 3-time X Division champion. And he actually was in the opening match for Bound for Glory this year in front of 3,000 people, which is big for TNA. I'm throwing out these numbers. That's really great for TNA. And it's one of the bigger pay-per-views as far as pay-per-view buys. It's trending to be one of their bigger pay-per-views that they've done in a few years. And he opened it up with Vikingo, right? And that was a tremendous match. He has been in several matches of the year for that company. I think he had a great run there. A lot of people were like wanting him to escape TNA, but it's like he had a great run in TNA. He made good money. He got his visa. I thought they did a really good job with Speedball. Here's the downside on Speedball. Guy can't talk. He sounds like a weenie, to be honest with you. So it's kind of says he wants to fight people, it's a bit difficult to take him seriously. But if you want him to get into the ring with some of the best wrestlers in the world and kick out of some shit, you know, and do some cool moves, do some flippy stuff, do some cool kicks, like he's your guy. Like he's one of the best I've ever seen. Like the guy is incredible.
Yeah, and that's why AEW is just the perfect fit for him. Like there are just plenty of wrestlers there that he hasn't worked with that'll make great matchups.
And AEW is the one place that's had tons of successful factions of nothing but geeks. Yeah, you know? Yeah. And so I could see them actually making him not being able to talk and sounding like a weenie work in with the right little crew, like an Orange Cassidy type crew, Dark Order type people. I could see them making it work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that. I thought this was an interesting story. James, you don't have to talk about this one if you don't want to. So feel free to bow out on this one. But MLW, they did a TV taping over the weekend. And but they had a production snafu, so they actually were scheduled to go live on YouTube, and their production, for whatever reason, they just could not get the stream going. And so whatever led
I hadn't heard that. Yeah. I didn't know.
So whatever led to this has led to Dave Marquez, who is in charge of production, no longer being with the company. When Court Bauer got the WWE settlement money, Marquez convinced him that they should upgrade and that they needed TV trucks like WWE and AEW have to be considered legitimate. GPW Productions, which did production for MLW from August 2022 to June 2024, used to fly PAX to do GCW, Defy, a bunch of other places. James, I'm reading this from the Observer. James Ontivero, who headed the production, ended up quitting, and Marquez took over, and the GPW team quit with Ontivero. So lots of drama going on in MLW land. They had a live stream that they just could not even get on the air. Looks like David Marquez is out. They have a show coming up on December 5th and featuring Eric Bischoff, of all people, and they don't have a production crew right now. So MLW looking good. Like I said, James, you don't have to talk about this, but because
for anybody who doesn't know, I currently work for the Reels Television Network. Okay. We had MLW for a little while. So I'm in about, other than to say to Dave Marquez, move on to Netflix. That movie was going on tonight.
I didn't want to put you in a spot. This was just on my list to talk about, James. So Joe, what say you about this MLW snafu?
How do you let that happen, to like schedule a live broadcast and not even be able to? I can get something on YouTube. Like if I wanted to get, like, I just wonder, did somebody like accidentally kick the wrong cord? It was like this one cord that you only had a special order and nobody could buy it anywhere. Like, what the hell happens?
So it's so funny. And the company GoPro Wrestling, they're called GPW Productions now. They kind of made fun of the thing on Twitter, the story. Yeah. And then I commented on them. I on the comment, I said, Dave Marquez out carnying Court Bauer is pretty tremendous. And we end up leaving, but at least we could always get our streams going on. This guy, you know, talked Court Bauer into buying a whole production truck with the settlement money. And the verbiage in that newsletter made it seem like it was directly from Court Bauer. Like he was complaining about getting fooled by David Marquez. So anytime I can talk about, you know, some funny stories, I'm going to go ahead and do that.
Oh, man. Good old MLW. I'm glad they put all that money to good use.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Let's see, we did have a question, and I want to close on a couple of questions here. I don't have any more stories. We're over our time here. Says transferring. He says, I have a question. If you don't have it on your list, what do you make of AEW having no tickets on sale for after the middle of December? Any guesses why? I don't know why. Probably just a scheduling issue. So they actually had a show coming up on December 5th or something like that, that was in Columbus, that they're running a bigger venue. Ticket sales were not great. They actually moved it to a Comic-Con, like a comic convention. So they're going to be working in the hall of the comic convention for Collision. They did book the Hammerstein Ballroom, which I think is actually kind of cool for Collision and for Ring of Honor Final Battle. I don't really make anything of that. It's probably just like a scheduling booking issue. They're probably going to get it figured out.
So one thing about that, the Columbus taping, is that that con, I was told, does draw about 40,000 people a year. So if you just, with some clever editing, AEW draws 40,000 people.
There you go. Yeah.
For Collision taping.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so, and one thing that I read that they're also going to consider doing more often is running Collision on Thursdays, taping it Thursday, and then, you know, airing it live Saturday, or airing it Saturday, which I think will be good for the talent, just being able to work the back-to-back days and then have more days off. I know they've got a show in St. Louis coming up, and Kansas City. tickets are not moving too well for those. I'm going to wait to see, like, if something interesting happens. You know, they just don't have people that I would want to drive 2.5 hours for, plus, you know, the gas and the parking, even for, you know, $30. Maybe it's just trying to find the smaller venues so they're not shelling out the money for the big basketball arenas, because, you know, Rocky does concerts. I know how much those arenas cost, and they are not cheap.
Our family is in that business, and booking out those arenas is pretty wild. And to only be able to put a couple thousand people in those arenas, like this past week,
money down the toilet.
Yeah. And you're throwing good money after bad, right? Like you're losing your asses. Yeah. You're getting TV money, but they were in Hartford, Connecticut this week, and they had a lot of people small number of people in this huge venue. And it seemed like nobody was there. In fact, I watched TNA Impact last night, and they were running like a 1500 seater in Fayetteville, North Carolina. And they had a little over 1,000 people there. It was like way more lively and vibrant and looked better on television than Dynamite did this week.
The bigger arenas, the fewer people in the big arenas, the sound just kind of goes out and has nowhere to echo back from. Mm-hmm. When like NXT, when they ran the ECW arena, I think they had maybe 1200 people there. But it sounded big because it's such a small arena that sound just echoes and comes back.
Back in the day, I was a concert promoter. I mean, small time. We'd do 5,000 seat shows, that sort of thing, and sell out. But the death knell of any promoter is to not fill a place. You would rather have more people that couldn't get in than to have hundreds or thousands of seats empty, because like you said, it completely kills the vibe. It makes it what could be a financially successful show look like a failure of a show. Mm-hmm. You know, and if they're still trying to do giant arenas with only a couple thousand people showing up, it looks bad. It kills the vibe in for the fans. It kills the vibe for the wrestlers in the ring, and you look like a failure.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's on every level, it's a bad idea.
Yeah, it is. I think that they should, for their TV shows, make the pivot to the smaller venues. I'm not talking like they don't have to go to like Memphis TV studio, but like, you know, get, you know, less than 5,000 seaters, I would say would be right up their alley. You know, I'm not saying be like TNA, but be like TNA. Like they're not playing these huge venues that they can't put people in. Now they do have a pay-per-view coming up, TNA Genesis in January. They're trying to do the Curtis Colwell Center, which is a 7,000 seat arena. And Final Battle was there last year, and they only did 1,800 people, and you could tell. So that's going to, like, I think AEW's done Dynamite's there where they've gotten 5,000, but then they were recently below 3 on some of those venues there or events there. New Japan was there and only did 1,000, so TNA is kind of really, like, they're taking a big swing for their pay-per-view in January, so that'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But we'll talk more TNA tomorrow morning on Brace for Impact right here on the Mike and JD Show. Head to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. And if you're watching this on YouTube, hit the like button. Make sure you're a subscriber and comment on this video. I would greatly appreciate it. James knows all about the algorithms, and that's what we do here. We've got to trick the algorithm into liking us. That way it draws more people in. But James, man, I really appreciate you being here. Your big return to podcasting. Where can everybody find you on socials, man?
Follow me everywhere on social media at Peppermint Fatty. That's with an F, because I'm, of course, red, white, and round. Other than Snapchat, ladies, slide into my Snap at X Peppermint Fatty X, because somebody stole Peppermint Fatty out from under me, and I will have my revenge on them one day.
Those imposters. Hey, do me a favor. Tell Dan Abrams I'm a big fan. I like his show on News Nation, too. And I'm a big we're Dan Abrams fans here in the Gilbert household here in Hawaii.
I will let you know.
Yeah. Cousin Joe, thanks for being here. Podcast Express reunion from circa 2017. Where can everybody find you?
You can find me on Snapchat at Peppermint Fatty.
No. We found the culprit.
Pretty much on just Twitter now, Joe Gilbert 1992, but maybe migrating to Blue Sky to get away from all the bots.
Yeah.
but there's nobody on Blue Sky yet, so we'll see.
I'm sticking with Twitter until it dies, and I don't think it's going to die. In fact, they've had the most uses they've ever had. But yeah, the bots are insane right now. I can't post anything without some pretend prostitute liking it. I'm just like,
It's a nice little ego boost, though, like having five people. You're like, oh, like these good-looking women like my post. Like, it doesn't matter if they're real or not.
Yeah, I had one follow me and unfollow me like 17 times the other day. I just had to block them. It's getting ridiculous.
Trying to trick you into the follow.
Yeah. But all right, guys, that is going to do it for us this week on the Mike and JD Show. JD will be back next week. That's going to do it for us. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. Amen. No rain from the track.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling, too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that, too. Love for you to give us a listen if you haven't already. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.